how rarely the subject comes up, even in groups like this. It's almost as though marijuana is the poor country cousin. We're all here talking about 5-methoxy-hydroxy, this and that. And the lowly cannabis weed, which has been with us since before the Vedas were a gleam in some Indo-European warlord's eye. It's very interesting how the metaphors of cordage are also the metaphors of creativity, that we weave a story and we spin a yarn. And all the connection between fibers and cognitive processes has always been well understood. I think cannabis has a bum rap. What I'm doing to decriminalize it is being fairly out front about my devotion to it. I just think it's trivial and silly, and it's like trying to outlaw masturbation or something. It has to do with having a torqued notion of human nature. These things exist. I mean, I'm not recommending that for everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Alan, it's a possibility, isn't it?
The very word secrecy is repugnant.
Secrets.
In a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers,
constant, extreme danger,
which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger,
extreme danger,
that an announced need for increased security.
What the hell is going on?
This is Conspiracy Queries with Alan Carr.
Will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control.
You're crazy!
And no officious, high or low, civilian or military, should interpret my words here tonight as an excuse to censor the news, to stifle dissent, cover up our mistakes.
Isn't the Pentagon suspicious that all the buildings would blow up?
Or to withhold from the press and the public?
I think you're just looking at things for the first time.
The facts they deserve to know.
You've had your whole fucking life to think things over. What good's a few minutes more gonna do you now?
The facts they deserve to know. They deserve to know. Deserve to know. Deserve to know.
Yeah. Okay. Will do.
Okay, welcome to Green Crush. What are we doing here? It's a hot day. Probably don't even know what the day is and what the number is of the show. Are you kidding me? It's episode 118 is episode 46. Because Green Crush is conspiracy queries and so on and so forth between the two. Welcome to the show. It is Green Crush. My name is Alan Park. I am the host. We talk about things cannabis related. Why did that happen? I got cancer. Oh no, are you okay? Yes. Yes, I am. That's the cool part. I shouldn't be, though. It was stage four. Good gosh. They guaranteed my demise. I wasn't supposed to be here for any of this shit. It feels like the freak show. Honestly feel like my life is, it ended in a movie theater. You're watching a movie. The theater comes to the lights come up. The show's over. They're running the credits. And for some reason, even though I was supposed to be done with that, it feels like I'm still sitting in the movie cinema without another ticket for the next show. And it started anyway. And I get to watch it. So thanks for bringing out Trump and Ford and everything else. I mean, I never imagined all that stuff when I was... The news is so crazy now, maybe the Onion's going to go out of business. But the reason I got to be here was, that's the important reason, is the cannabis that I use is very good for your body and your mind. Now, this could be mistaken as some kind of promotion of cannabis as something to be consumed if someone listening to this had a pickle so far up their ass or an investment portfolio so deep into big pharma. You might think this is all nonsense. But I can promise you, and I have been for, I think we're a year old now. I think this is our anniversary. We came on the air last July. And I think we are, I know there's only, you're seeing 46 episodes, but we've done a few extra, and we had a couple of weeks off someplace. But I do talk about this, and the mindset says, don't do that. Don't talk about it in such a way that promotes its use. Don't do that. That's what YouTube says. That's what Google, that's what we should call them. Google arranges their searches like people are trying to strike it down as a good thing. And when you know that the paradigm of control for cannabis, at least in Canada anyway, and that's my vantage point, that's my little bubble that I live inside of while I look around as best I can to other portions of the world. In Canada, as soon as they realized it was going to be legalized, who do you think they went to make that happen? Would you go to a lawyer, maybe, and ask him how to undo the laws? No, they didn't really spend too much time with lawyers. Not directly and not at first, anyway. I know what you're thinking. They probably went to people who've been really fucked up with cancer or some other horrible disease who were going to die for sure. He probably went and talked to some of those people and found out how great it was that they were able to extend their life using this allegedly dangerous substance. He probably went and talked to a bunch of them, right, before you figured out how exactly you were going to legalize. No, you didn't do that. You went to a cop. You went to a rights abusing. Look this up, everybody. If you're not in Canada, maybe you forget or you don't remember, or you don't care, but you should, because we are at the tipping point of cannabis going through. Everyone's looking to Canada right now. So look at how we did it. Google up G20 rights abuse, Bill Blair. This fucking punk lied about a perimeter fence law. There was no law, but he said if you were close enough to the perimeter fence, they could arrest you and detain you for hours and hours without meds, without water. They did it to hundreds and hundreds of people. And many of those people have been able to sue the government and get their money back because it was so against the law. But that's all quiet. And this motherfucker has not had any kind of punishment whatsoever other than being rewarded with a cabinet post where he gets to further insult, denigrate, run over, shit upon the rights of people. hey, we're going to make cannabis legalized. Who should we talk to about this for the big paradigm flip? I know, a rights-abusing pig. Yes, who will also be able to invest in all of these cannabis companies before they go full-blown wide open. Because we'll know which ones they are. We're going to set up the laws the way we want to set them up. And since I know, as Bill Blair, the police chief, exactly which one of these companies are going to be doing all the work, as many of them as I want to, I'll invest in. While I tell other people that they're criminals. While I dream up dozens of new ways to arrest pigs who are breaking the system. Nope, not arresting pigs. Pigs are doing the arresting, and I'm calling them pigs again because we are going to this. You will see it. You will see people getting arrested. You will see people who were not imbibing of any cannabis whatsoever have their night turned upside down as some cop thinks that they are under the influence, has no reason to believe this, has no proof whatsoever, but no longer requires any because a bunch of pigs changed the laws on exactly how and why a police officer can pull over a vehicle. And then if you blow heavy or whatever they're going to do, run a postage stamp across your forehead and check the glue, whatever system they've also invested into ahead of time. These are all traded companies on the stock market, folks. Look them up. Once they do that, then they'll know that, yes, you have cannabis in your system. You do have cannabis in your system, and so we think and we say that you are intoxicated. You are, spaced out. And we'll say you stumbled on the trip walk test, and we'll say you couldn't quite find the tip of your nose, although that's not really a fair or reasonable indicator for sobriety breach. So what are you going to do, folks? What are you going to do when you get arrested or charged or you have to go through a series of potentially anywhere from embarrassing to inconveniencing to rights and life shattering? What are you going to do, folks? Well, I have a pretty good idea. What you're going to do is you're going to need yourself. A cannabis lawyer. Yes, that's right. Somebody who knows about cannabis and is involved in it and perhaps even uses it. Although I'm not saying that. These people are there to help you out. You are going to need a lawyer at some point because they have recriminalized everything in the cannabis system of Canada, except for actually putting away the people that caused rights abuse and are now profiting from this new scam of a system that is gradually being unveiled. The more people I come across who realize the intricacies and the hammers of the law that I've been singing about for a year, they're going, oh, really? It's going to be a problem? What do you think's a problem? Now they're going, wow, that sounds really fucked up, man. I can't believe it's going to go like that. And I can't believe you weren't paying attention the whole year long while we were telling everybody this is how it was going to go. But thanks anyway. So now you need a lawyer, and you need a good one. Well, I'll tell you something. I'm dedicated to this particular plant and what it can do, and so is my new lawyer friend. Now, I've already met this gentleman, spent some time with him. I'm endorsing him because I believe in him. As a person who was a studying law and an articler, and now he is a full-blown lawyer. Yes, folks, it's Harrison Jordan. Harrison Jordan, cannabis lawyer at law. Has not given me any copy to read for him, but I am doing a commercial for him anyway. Are you an individual or a small business looking to navigate Canada's complex cannabis laws? Call me toll-free at 1-855-420-LAW. Yes, that's right. That's 1-855-420-LAW. And Harrison says, I wish I were joking. All right, thanks. Oh, we're getting into the scene again. Moving on to the next piece. Okay, so what do we have here is our guests today. Let me tell you a little bit about them. All right. Fantastic. We have some colleagues here before from Sensible Ontario. That was before the election in Ontario where we wound up getting the guy we were all telling everybody we didn't want. So that's happened. Doug Ford is in. And so Rod Elliott is involved in Sensible Ontario. And they were at one time anyway trying to put through the notion that in Ontario, this giant province that's already does house 40 cannabis stores as soon as late October gets here. Aren't you excited? There's about 70 of them in Hamilton right now. Anyways, so on the Sensible Ontario campaign, just to recap, they worked on the government, whoever was going to win, they're hitting on them to understand the need and desire and democratic right for consumption lounges. And that was a big deal because we don't even have in Ontario a lot of places or any places really, unless you own a home. Because if you rent a home, maybe your landlord's not okay with you partaking of cannabis in there. Huh? You ever think about that? Get a better landlord, maybe. So Rod Elliott is the senior vice president of Toronto for global public affairs. He's also the head of national cannabis practice, Cannabis Connect. And when you say that, you put the connect is all capitalized. So he provides strategic government relations advice to a diverse range of clients, primarily in highly regulated sectors such as health and finance. So this guy's probably going to be wearing a tie. He assists in private sector and not-for-profit organizations as well to develop their government relations strategies for engagement with the public. Within the Cannabis Connect practice, Rod helps industry players position their interests with governments as legalization is finalized for recreational cannabis in Canada. Finalized. It can't be finalized. So we're going to be talking about how there's no way near done yet. It's not anywhere close to that. And Rod is also the chief of staff to the Minister of Economic Development and Trade and to the Ontario Government House Leader, which is a government position. Yeah. Not just your house, but government house. He advised the minister, the premier's office, and the cabinet on the government's legislative agenda. He was also the senior advisor of issues management to the Ontario Attorney General and was previously 7 years at the TD Bank Financial Group. And Alana Sokic is with us as well. She's a research analyst with Global Public Affairs. And Global Public Affairs is a big operation downtown in Toronto. They do all kinds of things there. Glenna will also tell us what is going on there, because when you click on the website, it's a bit of a mystery to me. So we want to know what's going on with Alana and Rod, so we can bring them in a second, I guess. I thought we had a smooth intro there, but I guess we don't. Okay. Go ahead and get the guests. This is a live show, folks. Okay, let me tell you a little bit about this thing. Prometheus, this is a piece from last week, or 2 weeks ago, actually. A longtime marijuana activist tries to make sense of cannabis' new cannibalist capitalism. We're going to pick it up here from... it's been over a couple of years since Justin Trudeau said the new Libs would legalize marijuana right away, and when the Prime Minister formed his cabinet, he appointed a lawyer to be Minister of Justice, an infantry minister... Officer Sori to be Minister of National Defense, and an astronaut to be Minister of Transportation. One would reason that a scientist or a health expert would be put in charge of drafting marijuana legislation in 2015. Instead, Trudeau appointed a police officer. What was I just talking about? Yes, it's the former Toronto Police Chief William Sterling. Billy Blair was made Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Justice and the head of a 9-member task force. I guess he wasn't busy doing time for G20 rights abuse, and so they lumped that on his lap. At this point, I'm reminded of the Iron Chancellor Otto von Bismarck's maxim about laws and sausages, which was actually a quote from a lawyer and poet John Godfrey Sachs, which is, "Laws, like sausages, cease to inspire respect in proportion as we know how they are made." My personal respect was ceased not by process, but by the man in charge. So that's where we're at right now. We do have these crazy laws. We'd also like to throw out a quick shout out to Jenny Hallam in Australia. Hang in there, and I will spend some time at the end of the show updating the Jenny Hallam in Australia situation. But in a nutshell, if you don't know what it is, H-A-L-L-A-M, just look up Jenny Hallam, cannabis, prison, Australia, and you'll see how this woman might be going to jail for helping kids have an actual full life. So my guests are here in the studio. Thanks for coming in. Very nice to see you. And also, it was a bit of a tight squeeze getting in, right?
No problem. Thanks for having us on, Alan.
All right, we're going to slide you guys into existence. Here we go. Are you there?
I think so. Am I here?
Yes.
Hi, Alan. How are you?
Fantastic. You're all in. All right, good stuff. So, thanks for bearing the heat today.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got an impressive CV there, and you're in the cannabis world.
That's right.
So what I like to do to understand where everybody's coming from, because I wasn't in this world, right? And then I was in this world. And so what are your original thoughts? Like, were you a kid of parents who shared with you, or were you dead set against it in a sort of a policeman's mindset? And then how did you turn into becoming?
Well, Alan, maybe what I'll do is I'll start first because I'm the old guy on the team.
That is why I picked you first. Yeah, I figured if someone passes out today, it's going to be you and all of the rest of the show with Atlanta, no problem.
Yeah, and because I think it really is different depending on what kind of age category you come from. So for me, somebody who grew up in the 80s under a very kind of indoctrination of the Just Say No campaign,
right.
Drugs were always bad. Terrible. Like, don't do them. Just say no.
The frying pan and the eggs.
100%. Remember? And, you know, what really happened with me was when I went off to university and started experimenting with, you know, not only alcohol, but cannabis and whatnot, I was shocked to find out that, no, this was not some, you know, something that was going to destroy my life. It was not a gateway drug. And so I got really interested in cannabis public policy back when I was in university, and this is in the late 90s, early 2000s. And in fact, I remember writing a paper on cannabis legalization at the time.
Sorry, what year was that?
Oh, that would have been, well, Kretschmann was still in power. Oh. I went to university, that had been mid-90s, probably 95, 96, when I started taking an interest in cannabis policy.
Right after here, Kretschmann choked that guy, somewhere in that area.
It was right around the same time. And I think all of our Canadian listeners, given yesterday was Canada, this week it was Canada, would remember that very well.
Yeah,
well,
he pushed his thumbs into the guy's Adam's apple. It was a very effective takedown.
The Shawinigan handshake, I believe it's been dubbed. At any rate, I wrote this paper in university. I went off. I started a career working as a lobbyist. I worked for a major Canadian bank. I then went and worked in politics for the Ontario government, worked on the auto bailout, believe it or not. That was one of my files. And when I left politics and joined consulting a few years ago, I was working primarily in pharmaceuticals. And Alan, you know, what happened was we kept getting more and more questions about medical cannabis.
Hang on one second. How did you wind up getting shunted from, you say, oh, wound up working for, I mean, I didn't wind up working for them. How did that happen?
Oh, you know.
You seem surprised that would even.
Honestly, you know, I worked in politics for the Ontario government. I was looking for what was my next thing going to be. I thought I'd give consulting a try. I joined a consulting firm. I was primarily working on health files and pharmaceutical files for the firm and, you know, kept getting more and more questions about cannabis legalization and cannabis, medical cannabis at the time. So I've been working, I guess, on this policy, interested in it my whole life. But really, it wasn't until Mr. Trudeau came along and launched the task force, which was chaired by a former Minister of Justice, Anne McClellan, that came up with recommendations for legalization, that I really started to take it more serious as a business, because business, you know, obviously it looked more and more like we're going to legalization. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest with you. At that point, I thought they would shelve the report and we would, you know, do what most governments do and we wouldn't actually go through with the policy.
Right.
And so, you know, I think what's really exciting in Canada is we actually have a prime minister in Justin Trudeau who, you know, said he was going to do something, legalize cannabis, which, you know, I think a lot of people have heard people say, oh, you know, we need to take a different approach to cannabis. But he's actually gone through on it. So it's really an exciting time in Canada. And that's kind of my journey. And it's probably completely different than Atlanta's.
Yeah, probably. And you may be a little disappointed if you listen back to the beginning of this show.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Alan?
I don't mean to crap in your cornflakes, but I have taken up a contrary point of view for 12 months now.
Yeah.
What you're saying, I get all of that. It actually does fit into my construct of rage against this overlaying template of corporate, you know, control laid down by not only who did they consider to build the system, but who did they not consider to build the system? Okay.
Yeah.
So, but I it does all come together and it does all fit in, and it's not going to be clean cut.
No, and I appreciate your perspective, and I actually not only appreciate it, I respect all of the activists who've worked years on cannabis legalization, and I do understand there's some disappointment from an activist perspective because it hasn't exactly rolled out in a way that I think maybe people thought it should have rolled
out. Well, we knew that was going to always be the case. Mm. I mean, we always knew, hey, this is going to be amazing for everyone. No one thought that. But when they went to, as I said earlier in the show and many other shows prior to this one, so if you're uncomfortable being on the same broadcast as this, you know, they were out there for you.
Oh,
but,
no.
But basically, this guy is, and this is unassailable. He was the he put a lot of people in prison. A lot of people's lives are currently, at this moment, fucked up because their parents couldn't come home, or the kid, you know, something happened because somebody, daddy got arrested, and then the, you know, schooling fell off, and there were fights in the hallways. All of these tendril sort of events that spin out from all these arrests just for cannabis. Then he goes out as the leader of G20 and has this fake 5-meter perimeter rule against the concrete barricades of G20. Gets away with it. Everybody that was busted who has bothered to sue and take all that time and put a year or two of their life on the line and get their money back has done so. This guy's not been reprimanded. Then he becomes a politician. Then they go to him to straighten up all these drug laws while he's heavily investing into them before they hit the market or the whereabouts of us knowing about it.
Yeah.
So I'm a little uncomfortable.
Well, and I guess what I'd say to that is, you know, it took Nixon to go to China, right? It took an anti-communist.
Well, I'm happy to send Bill Blair to China.
Yeah, to go to China and create peace with the Chinese. And I think, you know, the law enforcement is basically been an important part of the puzzle to legalization, getting their buy-in, getting them steered in the right direction. So
why is I don't mean to not bring in Alana yet, but we're going on a road that I'm
no problem,
in.
Alan.
We do have time, right? We've got a long. This isn't an 8-minute sound.
Yeah,
right,
so. I guess what I would say is that law enforcement really, I think, has. I mean, cannabis was illegal. Law enforcement was enforcing the law, and I think getting police comfortable and the police lobby comfortable with cannabis legalization, I think it actually, I take the opposite view that I think Bill Blair was the perfect person to get the ball rolling. Is it perfect yet, Alan? No, but I do kind of trust that cannabis legalization, it's not an event, it's a process. I think what you're talking about, and what something that Alana and I are pretty passionate about, is the cannabis amnesty.
Right.
Which,
another thing that's not even considered in the paperwork.
Yeah, and I think that's the next piece of the puzzle that we really need to get done.
Like, there's a lot of the Emerys are polarizing people because they've been at it for so long. I like both of them. I know people say things about them here and there, but I don't understand how people like them and other people who knew what was up, who were you know, quite understood and well understood, well researched, and what kinds of cannabis and how to grow it and all these things. We don't need to hear from you anymore because you were arrested under an old series of laws, which aren't in play anymore, by the way. And we're making the money that you used to make. I mean, there's no clean edge of this thing.
Yeah. Well, I guess the only thing I'd say to counter that, Alan, and I, you know, again, I think we're taking a leap of faith with legalization in Canada, whether you're an activist or opposed to cannabis legalization.
Totally.
And I do think the government is trying to create paths for people who have been involved in cannabis on the illicit side or illicit side for many years. And so I think you actually make a very good point, and I actually totally support the fact that we need to find ways to bring people into the system, and also to find ways to into the legal system and migrate them into it. And I also think we need to find ways to you know, support activists. And I think the easiest way to do that and the quickest way is to really give them an opportunity to expunge their records and begin to live life, you know, and participate without a criminal record.
Yeah.
So
It would have been pretty funky if any of us had been anywhere near the back of the line of discussion while they were transitioning in the laws. But no, they just went down everywhere else, and you know they had a few people here and there at the end that weren't being listened to.
Yeah. Well, that's my story, Alan, maybe we should.
It's all part of the thing. It can't stop. It has to sort of globulate and grow out like this a little bit at a time.
And it's a discussion, right? It's a process and a discussion that needs to keep going.
Well, when you take the word of the government fully across the board, you're also taking the word of people who... Thanks for putting that down like that, too. That was very sensitive of you for a broadcast.
No problem, Alan.
Just put it down on a bed of feathers. You know, on the one hand, the government vis-a-vis science, but the government will tell you, look, this stuff is dangerous. We have to be on top of it. What about the children? This is really careful stuff. We have to be super on top of things. We're going to compare it to alcohol until it's something you could drink out on a patio, and then we won't compare it to alcohol anymore. And we're going to compare it to cigarettes, because, you know, cigarettes are shitty too, right? But until you're at the part where you can walk down the street smoking a cigarette, no problem, which you won't be able to do with a joint. So they couple up with the laws and the strictures of these other substances. Mm. And they, well, it's just like coffee, but you can't drink it in a, you know. So they're sort of moving it around all over the place while they say, because it's dangerous.
Yeah.
2 seconds later, they're going to turn around with the same face and tell you, we don't know enough about it to be able to know that it's really helped your cancer. We haven't studied it enough. There's not enough data to show this. Yeah. And fuck them. They can't tell us how dangerous it is on the one hand and tell us they don't know enough about it on the other hand.
Yeah.
Like, that just doesn't wash with me. You know. So there's a lot of folks in positions at the top that are not fully open to these realities.
Well, I guess what I would say to that is, and I think what you're referring to is the fact that they've taken this public health approach to cannabis. Yeah. Governments, okay, let's cut the shit, right? Yeah. Governments are very, very conservative. Even the most liberal governments are conservative. They're institutions. They don't like surprises, and they like to do things in a fashion that they're comfortable with. So when government, I think, took a look at legalization of cannabis, they didn't say, hey, let's start fresh and figure out the perfect system. Instead, they're more inclined to say, hey, let's regulate it like tobacco.
Right.
On the marketing on the marketing side, and let's distribute it like alcohol.
I agree, and I want to bring you in on this because while I agree with all that being true, it's people that have been kicking and fussing all along that have gotten it to the place where if no one said a damn thing about cannabis, first of all, a government run or a body of a party wouldn't be running for office on that ticket.
Right.
Number one, and number two, once it gets set up and running. Everyone is in a different, like you said, a different state of mind. Like, some people are going to think this is so great. Some people are thinking, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. But if no one said anything, it would be fascinating to see where the government would lay down all their lines. And it would be even closer to them and even more conservative and even with this liberal government than you say. But I think it's only with people bringing up these points, myself, Sensible Ontario, hundreds of thousands of people in this country. I'm not the only one. I'm just one of the few with a mic and a show every week that talks about it. But we all have these same things to say. But what's your experience with this, like, as a person becoming... let's go back to your... I want to get you back to your pre-cannabis days. Like, how did you even think about this?
So it's funny. In a fashion that's similar to Rod's, my sort of journey into cannabis started out very academically and sort of from a nerdy public policy perspective.
Right.
So I'm really, as you can tell, I'm a little bit young. I'm forging my career in this industry. So it's very interesting for me... purely from a public policy perspective, to be working in an industry that touches so many ministries, like Attorney General, you know, health, all those sectors. So I sort of joined or was involved in politics a little bit prior to this. I was involved in particularly at the intersection of women in politics. I'm a big...
So a particular party or certain platforms?
No, so I worked with Equal Voice. They're a multi-partisan organization dedicated to electing more women. So I worked on their Daughters of the Vote initiative, where they brought women from all ridings in Canada to Ottawa for International Women's Day.
Did that have to do with Trudeau swearing in people? And he said... They said, why is your cabinet 50-50? And he said,
this was post gender equal cabinet.
After that.
But Atlanta's been involved in gender equality issues, and which is actually really, like, a very similar, like we're talking social activism, similar to cannabis.
Yeah. So that's how I coincidentally in the cannabis sector sort of transitioned to Women Grow and organizations like that that promote women in the cannabis space.
Right.
And then I was involved in a research project on women in politics where I went through probably like so many interviews of Canadian female politicians for a book that is to be published. So that was sort of my involvement in the space. And then I translated that sort of activism for gender equality to cannabis with Women Grow. And it's funny you mentioned Sensible Ontario. We worked with them on their submission. I worked with Lisa Campbell and Abby for the submission to the Ontario government on lounges. So my interest, it's recent, you know, like I said, I am young, but it's been super exciting to forge my career in this industry.
Well, I'm old and it's super exciting to forge my career in this industry too. So
exciting for all of us.
That's great. So, and so where are we now with lounges? Where is that anyway? That's a huge issue. Just to sum up for folks that might not know, or you're in a similar jurisdiction elsewhere in the world. So as far as legalizing recreational marijuana is concerned, okay, our guests and I beg to differ on some topics, but it is moving forward. Mm-hmm. And but you can only smoke it in certain areas, and one of them would be your home. So that's cool if you're a homeowner and have a backyard or a balcony or something like this, but not okay for everybody in an apartment. Mm-hmm. Who is allowed to smoke at home, but the apartment owner that they're renting from says, no, you can't. Mm. So there's nowhere to actually consume this stuff, which is kind of funny when you see people walking around mm-hmm. with cigarettes. And so lounges, of which there are several in the city that have been doing well for 20 years or so, where are we at legally with them? I mean, there's a lot of aspects that have changed over time. You know, they lowered the bush height level restrictions and stuff. Yeah. So where's lounges at right now?
Well, do you want me to take the first crack at it and then you
sure.
Yeah, sure. So
well, you know, I think where we're at is they're really in limbo, and I think that's risky.
Mm. The existence of the lounges?
I think so. Yeah. I personally think lounges should be not only able to exist, but that they should be properly regulated. There should be a compliance officer who is there to make sure that kids aren't in there. And, you know, it's like in Ontario, where we are in Toronto, and, you know, in Kensington Market, where Abby's been operating for 20 years, there is no reason to shut down the Hot Box Lounge. And so I think what's
we would have had all kinds of problems from them already had that been the case.
Yeah.
Maybe in 2002, 2003.
And I mean, well, and believe me, I was in that Hot Box Cafe when it opened in 2002, 2003. Wow. I was one of the people who kind of checked it out when I was growing up living in Toronto, right? Yeah. So my view is the government needs to create a path for cannabis lounges to exist.
Right.
Right now, there are, and I'll use a hockey analogy, ragging the puck on this.
Yeah.
And so we're not, it's not clear, Alan, where that's going to go. But one of the things Alana and I were talking about on our way over is something that Alana has dubbed kind of like the education gap between cannabis community, cannabis industry, and the general public.
Oh, sure. In between each of those three entities.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, yeah. It's huge. And I think it's really, I don't want to use the word humbling, but very interesting to me when I talk to my friends who aren't sort of in this bubble that we find ourselves, because I would call it a bubble.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're asking me, will I be able to go down to my current dispensary and you know, purchase cannabis?
No.
And I say, no, you won't. And so there's definitely, like, I certainly take my knowledge for granted.
Uh-huh.
But to answer your question about lounges, so when we did the submission for Sensible Ontario or helped them with their submission, I want to say that was back in March. The Ontario government was open to consultation to an amendment for the Smoke-Free Ontario Act to talk about cannabis consumption sites. So there was a news article floating around this past weekend where that Smoke-Free Ontario amendment was put forth, and it outlawed cannabis consumption spaces for medical patients. So, you know, there is a new government. There's an ongoing advocacy opportunity.
They outlawed consumption places for medical patients.
Mm. Yeah.
So you get this prescription. You're okay to use it for your needs. Everybody signed off on it, from the governments and the health boards to the politicians, and now you can't take it in anywhere. I mean, that's where we're at.
It
this comes from, I love this moment, when you get to these completely screwed up junctures, okay, yeah, before we move on and you've got something to say about it, I love noticing that these are all the policies and thought structures of what we like to call sober minds that haven't bothered to sully them with this demon weed that just does nothing but cause problems in thinking and everything else. And all they present with their straight thinking, which is probably fueled with some scotch at the bottom of the desk drawer here and there, but we don't need to go there, right? They're saying cannabis is bad for your brain, and they continually offer these ridiculous piles of garbage in the way of trying to construct anything.
Alan, I think you're absolutely correct on that, and the misinformation that has gone on about cannabis for literally
at least
decades, right?
100 years.
Let's put it this way. I'm a guy. I drive a minivan. I live in the beaches, okay? And I have 16-month-old twins.
Oh, well, using cannabis.
Oh, thank you, man. Using cannabis is really, you know, to me, not that big a deal. I'm comfortable with it. I think it's necessary for medical patients. That's their medicine, man. That they need that. So for someone like me, who in Atlanta, and you, who, you know, we're really engaged on this, I kind of look across the street to my neighbors, and you know, maybe they haven't used cannabis since they were
high school,
university, yeah, right? So, sure. One of the things that as you know, to bring it back to this education gap, one of the things that I'm trying to do as a citizen who's engaged in cannabis legalization and trying to help people take advantage of it is, I also think it's incumbent on us to explain to people who aren't as educated on cannabis, mm-hmm, the facts. And right, so that's one of the things that Alan and I are really quite passionate about. Part of the reason why we like to come out and talk to folks like
again,
you.
Again, we had the police doing the same thing at a school in York Region where the officer was telling the little kids that the men are going to get boobies for smoking it.
And right? They apologized for that because that was misinformation.
Yeah, big time. Yeah. You know, it's like, but again, this source of same people. So these are the folks that put the laws into play.
And so I get it. It can be frustrating. And, you know, one of the nice things about living in Canada and in Toronto is at least we're moving in the right direction, Alan. When you look at places around the world that aren't, it's like, that's concerning. And so, yeah, it's a little bit disappointing that legalization hasn't rolled out perfectly in Canada. But I actually also feel kind of strangely proud that we're leading the world in this.
Trying to get to it.
And trying to get to it. And, mm-hmm, you know, certainly in the United States, legalization's coming from the local and state level up. Yeah. And for it to be coming right from the top in Canada, that's going to get people noticing around the world and hopefully ending this stigma. And worse than stigma, criminalization of people who use cannabis.
Sure. How are we going to... what is the actual mechanism? I mean, I've talked about it, certainly. I'm sure you have. What is the exact mechanism that you're going to do or have in mind to even dream up some kind of, I don't know, task force to present to the government to go, look, we still have some more things to talk about. This guy who got arrested in 1998 no longer needs this criminal record that keeps holding him up. You need to address, as they have done. They say they've been to the States and other places in the world. I doubt Portugal very much. But they've been to different places where they've put drug selling into play in different ways and means and seen different effects in different regions. I can't believe they've not considered or become aware of the notion to talk to someone who's been wrongly imprisoned for it already.
Right.
So how do we bring that to them in an official way? I mean, I could sit here and pipe it. I can scream into the mic all day long. But how do we actually go, look, Mr. Minister or Mr. Minister's assistant, what's super important and what's not going to be good for you and your job is if you keep these people marginalized, you didn't even look at a report in any kind of official capacity and then go, you know, we're not going to help them. They just totally ignore them. So. And this has got to be answered. So do we put a task force together or how does that happen?
Yeah. So, Rod, I'll take the first stab at this one. So there was an official Our Commons petition that has been circulating. So it's on the House of Commons website, and it is to expedite the process of amnesty for cannabis-related possession crimes.
Okay.
So that's one thing that your listeners
or
your
viewers... So jump on our website and sign on
it. Sign that petition. It's a great... great, like you said, mechanism to get the message across. There is a cannabis amnesty campaign. And I know Leaf Forward, they're an organization that promotes entrepreneurs in the cannabis space. They have weekly or monthly meetups, and they're hosting a lawyer, a Toronto-based lawyer, who's very involved in the cannabis amnesty campaign at their July meetup. So, you know, and Dawn Davies.
You don't have his name, do you?
It's a woman.
Okay. So I just promoted one on the show.
Yeah, I can definitely get that to you after. Yeah. But there's Dawn Davies, the NDP MP, has also been very outspoken for cannabis amnesty at the federal level.
He has, yeah.
And he has pledged to introduce a motion that will support cannabis amnesty shortly after the coming into force on October 17th. So, and I don't know if you had anything to add, Rod.
Well, you know, I think the way you get change is twofold: activism, and then you get a seat at the table. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so I think people in the cannabis community now actually have a seat at the table with this government. I think this government is listening. They're maybe not moving quick enough on some of these social issues, Alan, that are so important that you've identified.
Yeah.
And so the only way to enact change is, as you said, you talk, you educate, you reach out to your local MP and ask that they take action on some of these issues. You know, that's what Alana and I do 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year for our clients. We work with our clients to present arguments to the government in a way that hopefully they will listen. And that's how we hope that as cannabis lobbyists, and I'm like probably one of the older ones, I'm 44. Alana's probably the youngest cannabis lobbyist in Canada that I'm aware of. She's 24. I always think she's younger. She's 24. You know, like, that's how you do it, man. Yeah. You gotta work at it. You don't give up. You keep plugging away. You keep talking.
Right.
You keep putting that hand out and saying, Mr. Prime Minister, you've done a great job on legalizing cannabis, but the job's not done. So how do we get to that home base?
Let me ask you this. So that's been his one of his planks, and then he had other planks in his campaign which have come to fruition more quickly, the bringing in of refugees, etc. He said he was going to do that too, but that happened before the so there's different ways and means. So and then now the polls say they're in trouble. Now, it's probably impossible to determine how much of them being in trouble at the polls is related to a perception that they're handling the cannabis isn't so great. Probably not all that much, right? Because it's probably only a 10, I don't know what the number would be, but it's not like everybody in the province is furious at that. Well, some people think it's going ahead, but Kathleen Wynne, no longer with us in a political sense, the Liberal leader of Premier of Ontario, she was very bossy, pushy, harsh, not very open-eared when it came to these matters of cannabis legalization, etc. I know that personally. I can't remember. I think it was show 19 where you could see me taking her on at a town hall. And I'm just curious now we can't really know what the percentage of people pissed off about her whole cannabis legislation, which is similar to and built upon the backs of the federal legislation. Mm-hmm. But I wonder how many people voted her out or went to a different party because they didn't like her handling of the cannabis scenario, which is very similar to the federal handling of the cannabis scenario. I mean, are we going to be into a whole new situation now, say, for example, with Doug Ford? We have a blue-shirted, a blue-tied conservative premier instead of a red-skirted one now. And I just wonder, what's your take on the land now? We just tipped over. The guy just got sworn in last week. I mean, what's your feel on things now? Are we in a different world now, or is he going to pick up the same old pieces, or what do you think?
It's a great question. And first off, if I can talk about the past,
sure.
I do think the Ontario government took too traditional paternalistic approach to cannabis distribution and legalization. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that, and we were just talking about cannabis lounges and not allowing those. I think where the new government is going, Alan, isn't really clear. You asked about it. you asked about it from a perspective of how, you know, was this a big issue in the election? It was an issue.
Yeah.
No question. It was what we in our business call a wedge issue. It was an issue where people tried to make a point with the public. Right. And if you look at the last polling I saw in Ontario, about 60% of the public was kind of like on the fence about cannabis legalization.
Right.
So I'm optimistic that the new Ford government will take a different approach with cannabis legalization than the previous government did. Maybe they'll be a little bit more open. But the jury's still out. And Doug Ford, actually, during the campaign, didn't say a lot about cannabis.
Well,
and
he did say he was going to do the exact opposite of what Kathleen Wynne did. And then the next day, he said, you know what? I'm not actually going to do
that. Well, and that's a great example of how traditional politicians have treated this issue, which is very, very concerned, hands off, with the exception of our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, who said, no, sir, I'm going to legalize. And I, even back then when he said it, I was like, there's no way he's going to actually go through with this. And he did. Yeah. So I do think, Alan, it's not perfect, but we're getting there. And Alan, I don't know. What do you think about how cannabis was like an issue during the campaign from like a more millennial perspective?
I'll ask the questions here. Hang on. Now, Alana, what do you think about how the cannabis was dealt with during the election campaign?
You know what? I think from my generation's perspective, you know, as Rod deems it, the millennial perspective, I don't know if it was as much of an election issue as more of the social issues, traditional social issues, than it would appear to be. Like you noted, he did initially promise to privatize the cannabis distribution system and then walked that back a little bit the next day. As there has been a lot of time, money, effort poured into the Ontario Cannabis Store, you know, could we potentially see a hybrid model like in BC where it's both private and public in Ontario?
Yeah,
maybe.
That seems to make more sense.
Maybe we could we could see that. I think it's going to be interesting the next couple months to see what stance he's going to take on that.
We only have till October 17th to figure it out, right? It's not a long time.
Well, they've extended the goal line, so you know that's true. So I mean, you know, like a long time ago though with alcohol, it was illegal, and and then it became legal, and when it became legal, it was so you know, old school parochial here, where you had to go and fill out a little form and you couldn't see it or anything, and over time that sort of gave way, and so a lot of people think that it's going to be really tight with cannabis, and then over time it's gonna loosen up the same way alcohol did. But the difference between alcohol and cannabis, though, is I believe that that is true, that it will loosen up because people like us aren't going to shut up. But it takes time to get to that point. But with booze, once it's legal, people aren't demanding it be ever. They're only taking now to get it in a corner store these days. Yeah. You know, they've been fine with getting it at the specialty outlets and the wine shops and the liquor outlets. They've been fine with that. But cannabis isn't the same thing as that. I mean, you can't have a bunch of drinks and then change your health level. Where the way cannabis as a recreational is also, if you're taking enough of it intermittently on a recreational basis, maybe you don't need it medicinally the way I have. So it's got a different need in the aftermarket than booze did.
Alan, maybe one of the things that I can talk about is one of the campaigns Alana and I worked on was lobbying the government on behalf of our clients to allow online purchase of cannabis. And to me, this is the big untold story of Canadian legalization.
Go with that. That sounds good to me.
I will be able to, Alan, go online to a website, pick my cannabis, have it delivered to my office or home, sign for it the very next day. So, you know,
let me just
you know, and one of the companies
what's your credit card number?
Yeah, and one of the companies that, at least in Ontario, is helping the rollout of online cannabis is an Ontario company, Shopify. And so, to me, I think that's the great untold story. Canada, last time I checked, is pretty cold, particularly in the winter.
Yeah.
If I can order my cannabis online and have it delivered to my house.
But this already happens.
It does in an unregulated way. And so legalization will create a channel for people to do that, to know that when they input their credit card, it's secure to know that, you know, the product they're getting, it came from a licensed supplier.
So you see more of those than fewer of them.
I think in the most recent studies have said about 30% of cannabis consumers in Canada will buy their cannabis online. And and so for me, a guy who, again, I have 16-month-old twins. It's lucky if I actually even get to leave the house on the weekend. The fact that I can just order it online and it will come to my house, so then I can responsibly consume cannabis when my kids are, you know, off with the babysitter or if I'm out at a concert or something.
Why do you think they're not talking about it that much?
That's a great question. And I think it's the great untold story of cannabis legalization. And that was something that Alana and I worked very hard to ensure that online cannabis would be available
because
to consumers.
The other side of that coin is being talked about all the time. And that is, we're going to have 40 stores across this giant province, even though there's almost 70 of them now in the small town of Hamilton. And it's going to be fantastic. And it's only going to take a few years before we have twice as many as that, which is still just only a little bit more than... So yeah. I know that's nuts to think about it, but the other side of that coin is this mail order thing can take the pressure. Why are they so focused on, we've only got 40 stores, instead of saying, we've only got 40, but we're going to be able to distribute it in different ways. We don't want people driving. Look, if you've only got 40 stores and you want to play by the rules, you're going to get your little permit or whatever it is, and you're going to be able to drive somewhere far away because they didn't open up a dispensary near you in Ontario, and then you're going to get your stuff, and you're going to get a hamburger at McDonald's, and when you drive back, some cop's going to pull you over, and you're going to have, well, no, it's okay, I'm all legal and everything. These are going to be problems all over the place, right?
No,
so
right.
Why don't they just promote that more?
I think the online component, as you both touched upon, is a great untold story of this legalization that's happening in Canada. And I think particularly in Ontario, where we have a lot of northern and remote communities, whereas, like you said, there may not be an OCS location within a 40-minute drive. I know in jurisdictions where the retail distribution model is private or hybrid, access is greater in terms of bricks and mortar stores.
Yeah.
But I think the online channel will be super important, particularly for you know, people with disabilities who may not be able to leave the house and go to a store.
There's another
one. You know, there's many, many benefits to this online channel.
But again, we are stuck with this mystery of why this is not being discussed. It's like they're petrified of even mentioning it.
It really is, for me, someone, like, it's a head scratcher, man. Like, I don't know anybody who goes to a mall usually if they have an option of ordering something off an app or online. So I think that, Alan, maybe after October 17th, when legalization is finally here in Canada, maybe that's the time we come back and we talk about, like, is the online channel
here's what
working?
You're going to need to do. Because as soon, I will confess that on October 17th, is it? Is that the actual day?
That's the actual date.
I may not go there because, sad to think, it may actually be busy. Curiosity is a big deal.
For sure.
But I also think that a ton of people are going to go in there just to see.
Yeah.
And I think I'm one of them who I'm not going to partake of my stuff from them. I'm going to keep it as limited. I've still got online and other places that I'm going to go to because that's the reality. You're not going to have 40 outlets and then everyone's, oh, okay, well, I won't buy it anymore for... They say they're going to put a place up in my town of whatever it is, you know, within the next couple of years. So I won't buy it till then. That's not a realistic proposition. People are going to get it anyway, right? So this is why they're ramping up the laws and everything. But I just have to wonder how long it's going to take before they realize. And what is it right now that's in the way? I'm going to ask someone later. When they finally bring it up and start to work this mail order angle, I'm still going to say, so why did it take you so long?
Yeah.
Because it's pretty fascinating why it is taking so long. It's so natural. I ordered some, and I've had a few different. I've had three different experiences in the mail, and all of them have been excellent. Every single time, and you know, you might think, well, I don't know, I'm going downtown. Maybe I'll go to a dispensary. I'll get it quicker. Just order it, and like in a couple of days, it's at your door.
Yeah,
you know.
So you know, I think one of the things which, and what we're talking about is ease of access for people to get cannabis and. Right now, Alan, if I want to get cannabis, I have to find a drug dealer, text the drug dealer, meet him somewhere or he will come to my house. And so that is kind of challenging if you think about it in terms of how do you compete with that?
Right.
And if you only have 40 stores, the only way to kind of bridge the gap, so to speak, is through online. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's great. I know me, I'll 100% take advantage of online cannabis purchasing. I probably will go into a store too, Alan.
Just hopefully, to see what it looks like.
Hopefully there's one of the beaches. Maybe I'll go in there to get some education around what type of product I would want when it's, you know. But for me, yeah, I think it's great. The fact that I'd be able to order it online, take it, consume it, go to a Foo Fighters concert on a Thursday night, have a great time, not wake up the next day with a raging hangover because I could only consume alcohol at that event legally.
Right.
I think it's going to be like a game changer in Canada. Yeah.
See, that's another thing. Like all of these discrepancies, here's another one. The advertising of alcohol. I had the I got the LCBO on the phone a few weeks ago and got a very reluctant spokeswoman. I tried to explain to her that we understand that the government stands as a threat to advertise this, not to make it glamorous. We can't have mascots like Captain Morgan or whatever. with any of this, it has to be very boring and clinical. And while that's going on, they had a campaign for the spring and summer called Hip to Sip at the LCBO. So I called up and said, are we going to also have signs that say Vogue to Vape? are we going to be happy to puff or what's going on? And she said, well, no. I go, well, you are promoting. Like the reason they won't promote the alcohol is that the cannabis is that they feel it's doing all this damage to people. And then they have this scientific data that it is doing damage to people in an alcoholic sense. But it's okay to promote it in these fun ways. And having gals running around in bikinis and drinking, you know, Budweiser and having a great old time. And you're able to promote alcohol in this way, but not cannabis in this way. So hopefully all of these really tight zones, you see expansion into a little more acceptability and coolness and, down the road or what?
And one of the things, you know, Alana and I have kind of been focused on too is the missed opportunity in allowing cannabis companies more flexibility in promoting their product. And one of the areas that I'm very passionate about, obviously, is music. And so it would have been really, really great. And I'm still optimistic that at some point, cannabis companies will be able to, you know, sponsor the Beaches Jazz Festival.
There's another example. Right? Yeah. But you go, we can't do that right now because we don't want to promote. But then you'll have a beer at a hockey game and a, you know.
Yeah. And so it's frustrating. I get it. I think a lot of people in the cannabis community are frustrated with how strict it is. And so I think what my answer to that would be is, you know, we have to keep educating the public, politicians, get over this stigma. Cannabis is not evil. Let me repeat that, Alan. Cannabis is not evil.
We've heard from so many politicians and Raybould and some of the senators, though, that it is. That's the problem.
And again, it's like, you know, Alana mentioned, you know, like cannabis within the cannabis community, where we're proud to kind of sit and advocate and help on behalf of our clients. We get it, but there is that education gap.
Yeah, and I think to your earlier question about the advertising, what you're going to start seeing is a lot more industry coalitions and groups that will be advocating to remove some of these restrictions.
Right,
yeah. Well, I mean, you're seeing even this summer, you're seeing, you know, Tweed sponsoring the Field Trip Festival. You're seeing Aurora at North by Northeast. You're seeing a lot of cannabis companies.
Is that right?
Big producers.
I did not know they were allowed to do that.
So there's...
How did that happen? I missed that beat.
So there's a bit of a gray period between the coming into force on October 17th and since the bill received royal assent. Yeah. And I think what it comes down to, it's an exercise in reputation management for these companies, right? For music festivals to accept sponsorship from cannabis companies, it makes sense, right? Cannabis has a tight association with music, festivals.
The creation of music.
Exactly.
100%.
And for these arts organizations, you know, they're often starving for funding and they're looking for funding and for sponsorship dollars. So it's a perfect match to some extent, right?
Yeah.
But again, it's an exercise in reputation management. They're willing to take that risk, you know, if they want to strike the ire of the regulators who might not like that. So that's sort of an issue, as Rod mentioned, that we've been working on, that intersection there. And I think you're going to see a lot more advocacy on that front going forward.
Okay, so we can see more advocacy on that front. Are we feeling progress from you two, or you feel like you're getting something done? Because I often don't. But I mean, no offense. I'm glad you're in here today, and I'm glad to get your word out there. Yeah. But sometimes I feel like I'm screaming down a rubber hose, and no one's listening. Are you getting anywhere?
I think we're gonna see progress, and where I'm hopeful, Alan, is part of the reason why I think the government has been so conservative on legalizing cannabis is because we smoke it. Right? That's how people view cannabis. So they make an association between cannabis and tobacco, right? And we all know that tobacco is a substance that is, you know, not very popular with governments or public health agencies. So where's the opportunity? Within 1 year of legalization, the government, in the law, Bill C-45, has written in that there will have to be a legal opportunity to buy infused beverages and edible products.
And within that short amount of time.
One year.
From the opening date of October 17th.
That's right. And what we've seen in states like Colorado is that once you make edibles and infused beverages an opportunity for consumers,
right,
about 65 to 70% of consumers will choose to not smoke cannabis, but to use edibles or infused beverages.
Do you think that's why they're holding them up right now? Because they don't want people just running off and cramming candies into their head?
I think they're taking the time to get that portion right. I think there is concern about, you know, making sure that products aren't like don't look like candy that kids might want to use and stuff like that. But I do think there's a huge opportunity when edibles and infused beverages come along to say to the government, okay, yeah, I know you guys wanted to roll this out very traditional, very conservatively. Now let's take a different approach, right? I think I've made a prediction all along. I said the day legalization occurs, guess what's going to happen? The sun's going to come up the next day. People are going to be happy. People aren't going to be running through the streets going crazy on cannabis, right? Like
right.
that, like all of these stereotypes about what's going to happen. I think it's going to be...
That's very true. Yeah.
Right?
I think it's going to be fine.
Guess what? People are using cannabis right now, Alan, and things are fine.
I meant to say, I have said on that exact same note before, and here's what I really think. I'll just take it one step further. I think so much resistance to so much of all of this is based on the fact that as soon as it becomes evident and fait accompli that it's not this tsunami of disaster that these naysayer uptight conservatives are throwing at us, they're exposed as fucking liars for decades, for a long time. As soon as it goes a different way and all of your shit doesn't stick to the wall anymore, you know? And I think there's a lot of people embarrassed to have it turn around. There's a lot of people that don't want it. There's no need for this.
Siri is calling me out.
I just said, here's what it says. Naysayer uptight conservatives are throwing at us. They're exposed as fucking liars. So it's not exactly grammatically correct. And then Siri's coming back with, there's no need for that.
Why don't you go polite.
Fuck yourself, Siri. And I don't want to. Siri, why don't you get lost? I mean, I've even got it on private mode while I'm doing the show. God. Anyway, that's same people in charge. Whatever I was trying to say there.
Yeah. Well, I think I totally agree with you, Alan. Like, it's like when people realize that cannabis is legal in Canada life goes on.
Oh, it hasn't
hockey night in Canada will still
desire.
Be on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's going to be like, okay, now can we have a reasonable conversation about cannabis, and the newness is worn off, and let's talk about how we can do it in a responsible
make
way.
Make it real, because we can't wait another three decades from 37 to 67.
No.
Just when you think we're going to break out of it at the end of the 60s, they go deeper into it with Nixon. And then, you know, Reagan doubles down because his wife wanted something to do.
Right.
And it's been like 80, 90 years of this repressive. That's why we can't stand still and go, okay, well, that's the way it is now. And, well, they're never going to change things. Like, I'm so glad there's people like us, you know, making sure they don't.
Well, and that's the goal, right? And, you know, Alan, like, you're like a warrior in this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it turns out. Yeah.
And you have a platform, and I think part of what we're trying to do is use our platform as people who work as lobbyists in government relations to try and help educate activists and people in the community about how we, now that we have a seat at the table, how can we make it work for everyone?
I'm not going to hold you to this. I'm not gonna put you on the spot because I don't want to compromise what it is that you do. But you work with politicians. I don't know what that is. You work with politicians. I would say, so who out there that we all think probably doesn't smoke pot smokes pot? But instead of saying that, I'll say, do you know of any politicians that you've ever been involved with who have a I don't smoke pot persona over here, but actually they do partake on the other side of things without putting anybody's name to that?
You know what? I can't think of anyone.
I do.
I figured there must be somebody out there. But you don't have to say who.
But
it
I'm not going to name it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And you know, and it's funny. That's
it's one of the major political parties,
though. Well, yeah. Okay. And you know, I'm going to tell you something. The chair of our cannabis lobbying firm, Cannabis Connect, is a guy named Daryl Dexter. And Daryl is the former premier of Nova Scotia.
Oh, cool.
And so Daryl, while I don't believe Daryl currently uses cannabis, I know he did in the past, like a lot of politicians did.
Sure.
You know, and one of the things that Daryl and I and Alana have been joking about is who will be the first Canadian politician to actually go on camera and consume cannabis?
It's kind of like Justin Trudeau going into Gay Pride.
Right?
Right. I was thinking, you know, that he should just smarten up and get real and go into a cannabis pride parade. I think every single thing about gay rights is almost on top of it's a template. You know, I mean, we had three summers ago, we had Mark Saunders, the police chief of Toronto, right now, apologizing for the gay raids in the bathhouses in 1979, 1980, which was like 38, 39 years ago when Mark Saunders was playing with Tinker Toys. You know, if we didn't have the current police chief at that time saying, gee whiz, sorry for what we just did yesterday with this raid. And I would like to see, you know, not 40 years down the road an apology, but like now would be good.
Yep.
Now would be, we break now, we go now live to City Hall where the premier of the province and the prime minister of the country have, you know, this is the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they've said repeatedly that it's not, but I don't know how you look at a rights issue and say it's different from another rights issue.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. You compared sort of cannabis coming online to the prohibition ending of alcohol earlier and sort of the transition since prohibition ended to the alcohol regime we have today. And I think that transition with cannabis is going to happen a lot faster just because we live in the age of social media where information travels so quickly. Our information sharing capabilities are vastly different.
I've already just tweeted that.
You've already just tweeted that.
Just what you said.
Oh. Yeah. Well, did I read your mind?
No, I mean, that's how fast I was able to tweet.
Yeah. So, you know, so I think it's going to happen a lot faster. And I think, you know, you are going to see that apology, particularly for the amnesty campaign and in that vein.
We don't need decades going by before those apologies come.
No.
And I think that is something that the federal government needs to work. The Justice Department needs to figure out what is the mechanism. You actually said social change in Gay Pride. There is a template for the government. Being gay in Canada used to be a crime, and people were charged with it. And the government has created a system that people who were criminally convicted of being gay are able to have their record expunged.
Right.
And so it shouldn't take 40 years, hopefully, for that to happen in cannabis. And I think that's something that Alana and I are very passionate about. And that's something that we'll be working on as an issue as we move forward in terms of encouraging that mechanism to be put in place for cannabis criminal convictions sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Well, I hope that works out. I mean, I really appreciate how long have you been doing on this particular leg of your stuff? Because, I mean, this is, you know, you come from the banking world. You've been all over the place. How long have you been on this horse?
I've been in public affairs for almost 20 years, and I've been working on cannabis now for almost 2 years. And, you know, one of the things that I've really tried to do is actually go out and meet with activists and meet with folks not just in industry and meet with people in the community and engage positively. And Alana, who has been working with me now for about a year, has really been the one driving our business growth at Cannabis Connect, our practice, and really, you know, going out there and making sure that we're working with everybody in the community. And so that's kind of it. And I got to tell you, Alan, I wake up every day. I have the best job in the world.
Yeah.
I get to go to work and work on this like issue that is really a once in a lifetime issue that Canada is leading the way on. And so it's a blast, man. It's a blast.
That's cool. So in when we get to October 17th, is it October 18th that you'll be pulling up the chairs and saying, okay, look, we have to fix a few things, or we're going to let a few months slide for us as we move into the future of cannabis in Canada? It's coming up soon. It's going to be October 17th, like we've been saying, and I'm with a couple of social mindset shaping experts. So tell us what your thoughts are on the, let's say from October to Christmas, mm-hmm. What kind of different tangible items or news pieces or social adjuncts can you even predict or some things that we aren't quite aware of right now that'll bust open when things change?
Yeah, well, we've been talking a lot about access, and I think just due to the patchwork of legislation across the country, so it's sort of Ontario East, it's a more government-controlled distribution system, and then Manitoba West, you see more of a hybrid or private model.
Right.
So I think it's going to really depend where you are in the country, what post October 17th will look like in terms of access. So I think there's going to be a few kinks to work out for sure, as with any new initiative like this that a government undertakes. There's going to be access issues, potentially some supply issues. There's a lot of differing opinions on that. You know, I think there's going to have to be a renewed focus on the medical community to make sure they're not being left out of the fray and sort of this craze for the recreational market or the adult use market.
Right.
Rod, what do you think?
I think, and I'm actually, you're already starting to see it, I think you're going to see more mainstream companies participating in cannabis.
Sure, Shoppers Drug Mart.
Shoppers Drug Mart. Mm-hmm. The Canadian banks are now starting to participate in it. I think a lot of people, Alan, were waiting for cannabis to become legal. I think you're going to see a lot of health companies that are currently providing products, trying to figure out how they can provide a medical cannabis product. I think you're going to see, and we're already starting to see it, some alcohol companies trying to figure out, are we an alcohol beverage company or are we a cannabis company? So I think we're going to see this like mainstreaming of cannabis.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I think as cannabis becomes more mainstream, I think that's, and as you quite correctly predicted, Alan, as people realize that the sky isn't going to fall once legalization occurs, I think you're just going to see this industry and this community just continue, hopefully, to flourish.
Well, I agree with that, and I just have to say, jobs, jobs, jobs. That's what politicians say all the time. Jobs, jobs, jobs. We've got to get jobs, more jobs. We need jobs. We've got to get jobs. There's got to be an employment sector. We've got our numbers low over here that we need low, and we got to get our numbers over here that we need high. It has to be jobs, 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 jobs. At the same time they're doing this, automation, technology, you know, cars without drivers. There's going to be Lyft and Uber drivers and taxi drivers out of work. All these things are changing into more AI and more robotic sort of creation of things. Where the fuck are they getting all this tax money? Like, if you're a robot and you're making cars go around and you're a cog in a machine, do you pay taxes? No, but you're still getting the job done. So how are we getting rid of all these jobs through automation and technology, et cetera, while people are, you know, well, our unemployment numbers are down, and they're changing the entire purview and the whole paradigm of work structure. And at the same time, they're repressing against the growth of these democratic positions and all this kind of stuff in the cannabis industry. There's not going to be robot control. There's tons of money in here. Tons of money that could be taken without ripping off someone that wants to use this thing as a final product.
Yeah. And you know what? I would agree to that to a certain extent, but I think there's a very human element to the cannabis industry. From the cultivation, you know, you have these cultivation specialists who have such special relationships with the plant. And I don't think that can be replaced by automation. You see provinces like New Brunswick, for example, who have really seized the opportunity to make this a huge part of their economic development strategy and say, you know what, we're going to embrace this. We're going to employ a lot of people in this province, and we're really going to do a lot of good through this. And, there was the corporate social responsibility coalition that was formed out of the World Cannabis Congress in New Brunswick. And I think, you know, coalitions like that are really going to lead the way in saying this growing industry is one that you want to be part of. We're going to treat you well. We're going to give you jobs.
And for all you folks that don't really want to get high and you think this is all nonsense, well, guess what? You could probably rub this cream on your legs. You can probably take this as a medicine that's going to turn around some horrible medical problem you don't have yet or don't want to get or might not know about for a week or 10 days or a couple of years, you're going to change your tune. So this stuff is definitely of the moment, isn't it? There's just so much going on every day. I mean, I wake up every single day. I do this show once a week, but every day I have to parse through 10 or 15 stories that I need to get through. I'm not going to sit here for 10 hours a day, but I could probably do it.
Yeah. We have a saying, cannabis never sleeps.
Oh, yeah.
Because it really feels like that.
That's CNS instead of CSO. Yeah. I like that one better. Well, that's great. So listen, where can we get a hold of you folks? I think I might have pronounced your name wrong at the beginning. Sokic?
Sokic, yeah, that's
cool.
Right.
Oh, cool. Okay,
yeah.
So Alana Sokic is with Global Public Affairs. And how may people be able to get a hold of you at Global Public Affairs?
You can email me, asokic, A-S-O-K-I-C, at globalpublic.com.
And you can also follow us on Twitter.
Twitter, yeah.
My Twitter handle is at Roderick C. Elliott. And we also have a Cannabis Connect Twitter, which if you follow my Twitter, you will see Cannabis Connect, or it is at
Cannabis CNCT. We just tried to be clever and took out all the vowels.
Oh, good for you. That always works. We have to get on Twitter somehow. So thank you very much for coming in today. I really appreciate it. We're trying to get the conversation out there and try to make it not confusing. I think if someone listened to this show, they would know a lot of things they didn't know before they listened to it.
That's awesome.
That's all I'm ever trying to do is bring this forward. So thanks for coming on. I've got one more thing I need to say to people just before you go. Don't forget Harrison Jordan, right? Harrison Jordan. Go back to the beginning of the show and look him up. He's a guy that's going to help you out, and you're going to need his help soon because he's a lawyer, experienced and particularly involved in the field of cannabis, not the field that it grows in, but sometimes the field where you get in trouble for using it. You're going to want to get a hold of him. So definitely check us out again on Green Crush. We will be back next week with another episode. Your fists.